What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, we chat to the head of digital at OnPost to hear about the transformation that has happened within the company over the last number of years. Plus, Derek Riley is back. This time we're looking at the possibilities and capabilities of electric vehicles in the commercial sector. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. I feel like I always say this, but it was a very, very busy week in the world of tech yet again this week. On Tuesday afternoon/evening, we had the spring event from Apple, and it was very exciting. I'd been on with Jonathan Healy on the Pat Kenny Show on Tuesday morning previewing the event. And I said, you know, we might get some new iPads, we might get some new AirPods. I kind of was eager to see what they would do, but I actually said to a colleague of mine, I don't think it'll be earth shattering. Now, I'm going to stop myself there before I go over dramatic. It wasn't earth shattering, but it was super exciting. So it was very much focused on the computing side of things rather than phones. The phone launches usually happen around September. But what we did get was an all new iMac. This is their desktop computer. It's been around for quite a while now. It's gone through a number of iterations, but they've completely redesigned it. It doesn't look like an iMac anymore. It essentially looks like a 24-inch iPad on a beautiful stand. And it's incredibly thin because it has a new M1 chip in it. This is the same chip that is in the iPad Air that I have, that I'm always raving about with Pat. So the insides of it are incredibly powerful. The design of it is beautiful. And then they also have some new look accessories as well. So there's the mouse and the trackpad. You can get one or the other. And then there's also the keyboard. There are three types of keyboards. So you can get one that is just a bog standard keyboard. It's very small, very neat. It has like emoji buttons and some other button I can't remember. Then there's the middle one, which is the one that I really want. And that has a fingerprint scanner in the top right hand corner. And that means that if you are sharing it at home, for example, you can scan your fingerprint on it to sign in. And then rather than having the other person that you share the device with logging out and then logging themselves back in, they just press their finger on the fingerprint scanner and it jumps into it automatically. Small little things like that are just so clever and also so Apple as well. Other things I really liked about it, the power cable connects into the back of the iMac magnetically, which is just such a neat little thing. Also, you can connect an Ethernet cable to it, but you do it through the power block rather than into the back of the body of the device. Again, just super clever, really neat. It means you don't have as many cables coming up from the ground into the device. The only one that you should really have is the power cable. Everything else can be done on the floor. There's four ports on it as well. They've also upgraded significantly the camera and the mic. So if you are using it to work from home, quite expensive as ever. I think they start around €1,700. So it's by no means an affordable desktop for everybody. But if you are an Apple nut, or if you are someone considering investing in a device like this, it's definitely worth checking out. We also got a new version of the iPad Pro. So again, there are two screen sizes of it. It has that brilliant M1 chip in it. It has serious upgrades in terms of the camera. And it is definitely coming up against laptops and entering very much into that Surface space, where it's neat, it's very portable, It's light. It's fun to use. It's fun to engage with. You can use it handheld, you know, if you're watching Netflix or whatever, then you can connect it to a keyboard and do your productivity bits. But again, they're super expensive. I think they start at €909 and go up from there. What else did we get? We got the AirTags, which is Apple's take on the Tile or the Chipolo, so the thing that'll help you find your keys or your backpack. These are €35. Very clever design. You get a year-long battery life out of it. It uses the Find My app, so it needs to be associated with an Apple ID. So you do need to have either an iPad or an iPhone to utilize it. But they look really nice. It's very, very clever. The HomePod is now going to be available in Ireland. A lot of people message me on Twitter and Instagram asking when that'll be available. I think I saw it at €99. So that's good news, again, for the Apple fanatics who want all Apple everything around their home. We also got the thing that I am most excited about, which is the trailer for season 2 of Ted Lasso. So I was put onto this show by Cuan O'Flaherty, who presents Splunk here on News Talk. He told me about it a few months ago now, probably, and I watched it and I am obsessed with it. If you haven't seen it, it's on Apple TV. It is one of the most upbeat, positive, lovely shows I have seen in a long time, and it just made my heart happy. And they showcased the trailer for season 2. It looks fantastic. So that is coming to Apple TV on July 23rd. And finally, we got the iPhone 12 in purple. So they're upgrading the colours. The purple was available on iPhone 11. It's slightly different on the iPhone 12. The spec still remains the same. It's just a different colour for anyone who was contemplating upgrading but didn't want one of the colours already available. You can now get it in purple. So there was a lot to sort of unpack there from Apple. Speaking of unpacking, actually, there's a Samsung event next week, which is very exciting. So we will hopefully get to see new devices from Samsung. It'll be interesting to see what they have up their sleeve. Needless to say, we will have full coverage of it all here on News Talk. But we're going to kick off this week's show with On Post. And I'm joined now by Des Morley, who's the Chief Digital Officer at On Post. Des, you're very welcome to the show. I'm looking forward to chatting to you because I am one of those Irish people that's just fascinated by the postal service. I don't know why, don't know where it came from, but I'm very much looking forward to hearing how you have digitally transformed the business over the last number of years. Before we sort of jump into the nitty-gritty of it, you might just tell us a little bit about your particular role and what does that entail?
My role as Chief Digital Technology Officer, essentially I'm responsible for all of the all of our IT infrastructure and all of the underlying sort of digital technology that we use to run the organization. So I joined the business about two and a half years ago, and in the time that I've been with the business, we've been developing out our digital strategy, I guess, so that we can, I guess, further enhance our digital capability to provide better services to our customers, both in our delivery business and retail and online. So,
yeah, let's stick with the postal service because we know that that alone has gone through a huge shift in recent years. I suppose our use of the postal service, what we get posted and shipped to us, has changed dramatically. We obviously have the air code system that arrived into Ireland not that long ago. From a developmental point of view on the postal services side of the business, can you talk us through some of the work that has been done?
Yeah, so I suppose the mails and parcel business has, I suppose, not too unlike most businesses, I guess, gone through a massive amount of digital disruption. And I suppose we've embraced that now. We've developed out a sort of a digital transformation strategy that really sort of brings to fore, I guess, all of the enabling technology that we can use to provide better quality of service to both our customers and to the delivery logistics business that we run. So we've built out an awful lot of capability with regards to our track and trace services, with regards to our last mile delivery service, with regards to how we support our customers to get better information on how and when they're going to receive their items. And so there's been a huge amount of advancements that we've made in that space. But obviously, naturally, our big customers here, our customers, insofar as we think about them internally, are very much the resellers, the sellers who are sending items, that are ingesting them into the OnPlus network. And naturally, we have to work very closely with them to make sure that the quality service that we deliver on their behalf is on a par and is hopefully even better than what they demand of us. So we spend a lot of time working closely with those customers, thinking about how we can better enhance the customer experience, thinking about how we can improve on our SLAs, the service level that we like to offer those customers, and ultimately then obviously to the end user recipients, how we can better improve the experience that they get from OnPlus.
Do you have to invest heavily in the tech infrastructure side of things? Like, obviously I don't understand all the tech that is in use, but have you had to invest quite heavily over the last number of years from a financial point of view to get to where we are today?
Yeah, there's a number of enabling factors, I guess, that help our digital transformation strategy. Capital investment is obviously one of them, but so also obviously, I guess, is cooperation and I guess the culture of the business, I guess, in terms of the change. So in terms of the capital investments, we have invested very heavily in this space, right across every aspect of technology that we use, I guess, from how we manage the logistics side of the business. If you think about on the mail side of the business, we invested heavily over the last number of years on automation machines that do all of the sorting for us now. So that's why we're able to deliver the volume of items that we deliver on a daily basis. Oftentimes that can be upwards of 2 million items a day. So we have to find a way that sort of volume can get through the network and be dispersed out to the various routes that we have so that items can be delivered. Likewise, I think more recently on the parcel side of the business, as we've seen this massive growth, you know, over the last number of years, and even more so in the last year with the with COVID and so on, we're dealing with volumes that, you know, we probably hadn't projected to deal with for 5 years time. So we've invested heavily in how we manage the volume coming in to us so that it's done in a kind of much more automated way. So we have now two automation units now that handle the vast majority of the items that are coming into us that are essentially e-commerce items, parcels and packets and the like, so that they can be quickly processed through our receiving parcel sorting hubs and then dispersed out then to the various routes. So that's one element that helps us to take in the sheer volumes that we're having to deal with. With regards to how it then goes out to the network, naturally then all of the various machinery that we require then, be it scanners or be it various other data capture points, have had to be upgraded over the last couple of years to deal with the volumes. And so it's critical to keep the network running and to keep it moving smoothly, is that all this information transfer is happening in real time. And so, you know, if you can imagine, as a customer would be receiving an item, as it's coming through our belts at the receiving points, notifications are being triggered to go out to customers, which then informs them that the item's on its way and gives the customers the opportunity then to either say they're home or they're not home, and if they need to redirect or choose for redelivery, that they can notify us. And that then helps us in terms of driving more efficiency in how we get items to customers. So right across the board in terms of the operation side of the business, right the way down to customer experiential items, we've made massive investments.
Yeah, and you see it a lot. Like, I know myself, I've had nothing else to do other than shop online. And those text messages saying that your package is here, there and whatever is very, very beneficial. You mentioned there as well about the buy-in from staff. How has the transformation gone down with the staff? Because OnPlus is one of those companies that you'd have people who have worked there for their entire lives, the lifers who kind of know how things would have been done, used to be done. But now, as we've been talking about, there's a sense of innovation. So how much training goes in, but also how much disruption has had to take place to get to where we are?
Yeah, like, there's no doubt about it. One of the key successes we've experienced over the last couple of years has very much been down to our staff and to our group of unions and for their cooperation. I think everyone you know, embraces the change, recognizing that this is just something we have to do. If you go back a number of years and you look at the sort of the mail volumes that we've had to that we were dealing with to now, we've seen that decline as you've seen e-substitution take over from traditional mail. But notwithstanding that, there's still a large volume coming through. And we've seen at the same time the growth of parcels, the growth of online shopping. And so that's presenting a different challenge. If you go back to, you know, bags and bags of mail, you can deal with, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of those items quite swiftly. Whereas parcels, obviously, and packets and so on, they come with a very different challenge. So the logistics side of the business have really had to sort of embrace that change. And from the staff side, we've seen a huge amount of cooperation. And I think all of this wouldn't have been possible unless we had the sort of the forward thinking and I guess the progressive attitudes we've had from each of the staff members with regards to how we manage the change. You've probably seen that more recently, I think, through the entire sort of COVID period, certainly going back this time last year when the whole pandemic broke out, I guess, the response of our staff, not just in our distribution business, but essentially in retail as well, has been second to none. I mean, they were very much the ones who were coming forward saying, what can we do to help? What more can we do? And so while we were trying to contend with this massive volumes, you know, this time last year we were dealing with volumes on a daily basis that we're used to seeing probably in the previous Christmas period. But they were also looking to see, well, what else can we offer by way of community support, you know? And so hence a lot of the initiatives that we were able to roll out, be it calling in on the elderly or checking on the vulnerable or providing newspapers and various other postal services that we could offer. That was done on top of, you know, a very, very large volume of peak traffic that we were dealing with. And so, I think a huge amount of credit goes down to the staff. To answer the point specifically with regards to the technology, you know, we obviously needed to make sure that the technology that people have with them on their delivery routes and so on was world class. So we actually swapped out about over 5,000 scanners that they had been using for a number of years to more modern technology. So what they have with them now, we're thankful, is providing, I think, a far better quality of service than what was there previously.
You mentioned there about the postal service workers checking in on the elderly and going above and beyond during the pandemic. And that really does feed into the notion, the romantic notion that many of us have of On Post. It's a huge part of communities around the country. And as you develop on the innovation side and the tech side, are you very conscious of sort of clinging on to that sort of core value of community?
Yeah, and that's precisely, I guess, the strategy. You know, we recognise that that our post people are the hearts of their communities, and indeed the post offices in the communities as well. So what we're trying to develop out, I suppose, is complementary to that. So as a customer, you know, each of us know our local post person, and you've developed that sort of rapport and that bond with that individual over time. But there are probably occasions where, you know, from a digital perspective, we should be providing both yourself and indeed the post person better technology and better data so that we can enhance and improve the quality of service that we deliver. So a case in point, we launched the Parcel Delivery Manager application there a couple of years ago, and we put through that process then notification that items are on their way. That then allows the customer to choose whether or not they want to receive the item or redirect it to another time or location. And in doing so, you know, that helps us then to feed that information down into the network to let the postal operative know that certain items there's is not to be delivered today. So we reduce the number of missed deliveries that we do. So, you know, that's probably an example of where, you know, technology and that human touch, I guess, are complementary and improve the service both for the customer that's receiving the item, but certainly reduce the efficiency, the frustrations that maybe are there with some of our postal staff.
Yeah, it must be frustrating, I suppose, to know that the facilities are in place to allow people to alert their post person that they're not going to be in if a parcel is arriving. And it's almost a wasted opportunity or a waste of time from the postal person's delivery schedule if somebody is not going to be in. Obviously, there'll be emergencies and stuff will crop up. but that must be a frustration. Are the drivers timed? You know, are they up against the clock in terms of completing their routes, or are there any pressures on that side of things?
No, they're not timed. They're certainly trying to be as efficient as they can going out on their routes. Mentioned earlier on that there sometimes can be a differential between letters and parcels, not just in terms of the time of day that they arrive into us, but also in terms of just the sheer logistics of bringing letters and parcels on the same route. So we're trying as best we can to enhance the delivery efficiencies for our postal staff so that they can complete their routes as quickly as they can, get items to customers as fast as possible. But certainly the sense that you have when you're part of the Unpost team, it's not about timing anyone individual to see how quickly are they going and are they being as efficient as they can. It's very much a customer facing, improving the quality service that we offer and trying to make sure that people perceive their items as swiftly as they can. So it's a much more sort of customer facing kind of pressure, I think, that each of us are sort of faced with.
Des Morley of Unpost is going to stay with me, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the retail side of Unpost.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address if you'd like to get in touch, or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. I'm chatting to Des Morley, who is the Chief Digital Officer at Unpost. You've mentioned there a few times about the retail side of the business, and I know that there are a number of services that Unpost offers that people may still not know about, even though they've been there for quite a while. We on the Pat Kenny Show here on News Talk not that long ago were talking about Unpost Mobile and a specific mobile phone that is aimed at the elderly or people who just want a very, very basic phone. Can you give us a bit of an overview of some of the outlets and offerings from Unpost that maybe we don't necessarily think of?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Unpost is obviously it's quite a complex and diverse business. The mails and parcels business is obviously essentially becoming more of a logistics business now and delivering both mails and parcel items. We are a retailer. We're the largest retail entity in the country, with over 900 stores nationwide. We are a provider, obviously, of financial services with our Unpost Money brand. We provide a very wide range of government services on behalf of government. And we have a whole plethora of different subsidiaries, be that in post insurance or post point services, or indeed our business. So it's quite a diverse business. I guess it's one of the reasons why I think we all love working here. It's just the sheer diversity of what we do provides us all a new and exciting challenge every day. But those businesses, each of them have their own challenge, I suppose, in terms of digital. They're all on a different trajectory as to what they require, different levels of maturity and in terms of where we're on that digital maturity level. And so we're constantly trying to, you know, imagine or reimagine how we do services and how better can we provide a quality of service to customers using digital maybe as an enabler.
Yeah, it's definitely a much more complex business than just one post office on a main street that will sell you stamps and give you your pension or whatever it is. There's so much more to it. We know now that there is a lot of data being created and gathered at all times by all kinds of companies for all different types of purposes that can be studied, fed back to the company, and then used to enhance some of the efficiencies, I suppose, that we've already spoken about. Is that something that you're looking at in terms of trends and how people engage with Unpost to try and keep the company sort of agile and able to respond to trends as they appear rather than as they hit?
Correct. Data is one of the key elements of our digital strategy, actually. We know and we recognized some time ago that there is a enormous amount of data passing through the organization, be that on the mails and parcel side or in retail and so on. The sheer volumes of transactions that we do day in, day out is valuable to us in that we need to understand what the data is telling us and how we can better improve our operation. So we've got a very large data program on at the moment, trying to look at our data infrastructure, trying to look at making sure that we have the right data systems in place so that we can harness that information to provide greater insights to the organization, to be that to drive efficiency or to improve our customer experience or develop out new propositions and new products and services. So it's a big part of what we do. A lot of what we're in, the information that we use today helps us to drive more optimization through the network, understanding some of the, we're very lucky in that regard, I suppose, that we have a lot of very good data already, and that we're able to utilize that. But I think there's still more opportunity there to capture some more data, particularly from a digital perspective as well. You know, customers now expect data to be available to them on their smartphones in real time. If you just take the example we spoke about earlier on, the notion of a parcel delivery on its way to you, we need to be able to inform customers when we will be on our way and ideally give more kind of real-time information in terms of updates as the parcel is sort of tracking its way towards you. And so we're constantly looking to see how data could further enhance some of the propositions that we have and the customer experiences that we offer.
There's been a lot of talk, obviously enough, over the last 12 months about the different challenges different businesses have faced. And we've heard in previous years about some of the difficulties perhaps that OnPost has gone through. The digital operation is very much ingrained into the core of the business now. But what does the future look like? And what will the focus of OnPost be, and will it remain that hub and heart of the community?
Well, we very much think so. You know, it is obviously a critical piece of infrastructure, for national infrastructure, really. It is. We all know that it's a, you know, it's a locally Irish iconic brand. It's a trusted brand, I guess, and that seems to come through in all of the research that we see. Our strategy, I suppose, over the last number of years has really got us to a point where we've put the company back now on a sustainable footing. We've moved from a company that was essentially loss making now to a company that's able to sustain profits that can be then reinvested in the business, and we're putting those investments very much into our infrastructure. So the intent in this, was the strategy for going forward, is really to continue to transform the business, to make OnPost, fit for the future, to modernize as best we can, to compete. And it's one of the things that people don't recognize, I guess, with OnPost. You know, while it is a commercial semi-state, in the vast majority of services that we offer, we're competing with other large-scale operations and international businesses in some cases. So, you know, we need to continue to develop out our services to become efficient, to develop products and propositions that we can offer to our customers that we believe will be market leading. We've made huge strides, for example, in financial services. And you'll have seen more recently with the OnPost Money brand, how we've brought out a range of services, be that in current account, credit cards, loans, and indeed we're well known for foreign exchange and foreign currency products. But we're enhancing that further with the likes of our loan products. Our green loan products is a good example, where we're trying to develop innovative financial service offerings that we believe customers will be drawn to. And so we're constantly trying to reimagine the business so that we will be there for the future. But there's no doubt about it. Digital is very much at the heart of a lot of what we do, but we know that our people and the human touch that we can offer, and that local market, local area service offering, is kind of critical to our success.
Yeah, I was in the GPO a number of years ago recording a report, and first of all, I was blown away by the number of offices in the GPO upstairs. I just never would have thought there was that many people working there. But the other thing is, you must have all kinds of everybody from different backgrounds, different qualifications and so on, working as part of OnPost as a result of all this change.
Yeah, very much so. We have a very diverse range of employees and backgrounds and skill sets, and we need that, obviously, for the multiplicity of products and services that we offer, and for the complexity of running the business. It's something we've been taking a really close look at, is to think about the skill sets that we need for the future. So, like every other organization, I guess we're presented with those challenges as to you know, what will we need in order to make the business sustainable? So we have and continue to offer, you know, a fantastic graduate program where we're bringing in lots of young and talented individuals who come in and bring new skill sets and bring a new perspective on things, and certainly add to the mix of the rich mix of culture that we have within the business. So you know, we're constantly in that challenge, like everybody else, I guess, you know, as to how will the world of work change and what are the skill sets that we're going to require for the future. So I myself, obviously being more on the technical side of the house, are you know, continually chased, I guess, was challenged with that objective, I suppose, of making sure that we have the latest skills and the best people. And so so yeah, it's going to be a continual challenge for us.
My final question, and I've been told to ask this by a young relative of mine, is: will OnPost ever deliver by drone?
I think that's certainly there's lots of trials going on right now from various companies and different things. We did one ourselves a number of years ago. Will the post ever be delivered by a drone? This is a personal view as opposed to an on-post view. I really hope so. I really do. I think that's something that I think is going to be the future. But how and where that's going to work will be hard to tell. But I think there are already some interesting trials going on around Ireland at the moment. So let's see how they go.
Brilliant. Well, that is great news indeed. Des Morley, Chief Digital Officer at OnPost. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you here today on News Talk. Thank you so much for your time. Coming up next, Derek Riley looks at the future of EVs in the commercial sector.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address if you want to get in touch, as always, or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. Before the break there, we heard from Des Morley, who's the head of all things digital and innovation at OnPost. And you heard him say there in his own words that, you know, hopefully before long, we could potentially maybe kind of have drones delivering our post. But what about electric vehicles and other types of mobility vehicles that could help them get our letters and parcels to us? You may have heard last week's Tech Talk, where we did a special on mobility. We heard from the guys at Park Office and the guys from Zip Mobility about what they'd like to see in the future. But to kick this conversation on a little bit further, I'm joined once again by Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel to look at what businesses and commercial operators, I suppose, the big players who are using heavy goods vehicles, what they could do to either lessen the impact on the environment or, again, look at innovative ways of getting around the place. Derek, how are you?
Very good, Jess. How are you?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to this conversation because most of the time when we've spoken, we very much focus on either personal mobility, as in like the scooters and the electric bikes, that kind of jazz, or electric cars, like for family cars. But today we're going to focus on more of the commercial aspect, as I said there now. Before we jump into sort of the future, whether that is the near future or the distant future, what's the status in terms of options for people looking to embrace a greener fleet of vehicles for their operations?
It's definitely getting bigger, and the choice is getting more and more. Every month there's a new announcement, whether that's an electric van, whether that's an electric bus, whether that's a cargo bike. And I know a number of our listeners will be cyclists and avid cyclists, and sometimes they feel a bit forgotten, but definitely cargo bikes, and it's huge on the continent, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of that here. And so that would be either a two-wheeler or a three-wheeler that will have a large front bucket or box that you can store your tools in, or you can store your deliveries in, and that scoots in between the traffic. So and it's assisted by a battery as well to give you a bit of an extra help up the hills and against the wind.
Yeah, so as always, when we're talking to you, that there's plenty going on in this sector. And I think I've seen more and more of the press releases arriving in from different brands saying we're now doing X type of van that is either a hybrid or is an all electric, which is great to see. But I suppose the proof will be in the pudding, whereby, you know, we need to see numbers in terms of how many companies are you know, investing in these vehicles, because it's one thing to make them and have them available. It's another thing to see if people actually want them and if the range anxiety that we've sort of dispelled as a thing of the past when it comes to personal cars is a thing of the past when it comes to commercial vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have the likes of OnPus, like you talked about in your previous segment, and they've been great. Between the canals, they've tried to electrify everything. So from everything from the bicycles, obviously they don't need to be electrified, but there are e-bikes or assisted bikes. They have their tricycles, they have their small vans, they have their big vans, and they even now have a large lorry, all electric, zero emissions. So that would be something that would be held up within the commercial space as if it's good enough for OnPus. And it's not just OnPus, it's the likes of DPD, logistic companies. And these are workhorses. They're out all day, every day, doing one, maybe even two shifts. And if you're sitting and listening to this and sitting in your van, or you run a commercial enterprise and going, I wonder, will this work for me? When you see the likes of within Ireland, OnPus or DPD or other enterprise level sizes of operations, or even if you look across the water to the United Kingdom, I know British Gas are after bringing in a massive fleet of electric vehicles. Now, the irony is not lost on me that it's a fossil fueled energy provider in the United Kingdom. But when they are transitioning to electric vehicles, somebody's doing it for a reason, and hopefully it's the right reason.
Yeah, and look, every time we chat, there are inevitably emails coming into techtalk@newstalk.com, and people say that I like the idea of electric vehicles, but what about all the, I don't know what the technical term is, so I'll say the hoo-ha that goes into producing them and the batteries and all that malarkey. You know, do they really cancel each other out in terms of everything from the manufacturing to production to road use? Does that really sort of cross out all the emissions that would have been released if it was just the old school vehicles?
Even if the electric vehicle is powered by the dirtiest of energy stations, a big coal-fired power plant, over the lifetime of the vehicle, it produces 50% less greenhouse gases. So yes, like any vehicle, whether it's a new van, whether it be that electric or combustion, whether that's a new cargo bike, whatever it may be, it takes carbon and minerals and materials to manufacture this, and a lot of energy. So yes, buying something new rather than reusing it will take more. But that cycle and that circular economy of reusing the battery, recycling the battery once it reaches its life, it's been looked at more and more and more. Where are the rare earth minerals coming from? Are they coming from ethical sources? But to come back to the point, why would a business transition to an electric vehicle? Couple of key points. It will be more expensive at the start. Buying an electric van may be up to 50% more expensive, and people might have switched off the radio already. Hopefully that's not the case. But what we need to look at is the running costs, the servicing, and what they call the total cost of ownership. So what is this van, cargo bike, whatever it may be? Obviously a cargo bike is a bit easier to quantify, but a van, if I compare a diesel van versus an electric van, my goodness, look how much more expensive that diesel van is at the start. But if you're able to get cheaper electricity, there's a lot less moving parts, you can utilize it a lot more, and it's off the road less because there is less moving parts. And that overall total cost of ownership, the numbers are starting to be crunched. And when you look at the likes of the bigger operations, they're saying it's actually more cost effective to go electric. We're not talking about the environment, we're not talking about anything like that. It's down to the numbers.
And that sometimes, you know, would have a greater sway, because we know that a lot of companies, and this is my big cynical head on me, but a lot of the times they'll announce that they're doing stuff for the environment to get a bit of good PR and to get the pat on the back and the, sure, aren't you great? God, you're single-handedly saving the planet. But they wouldn't be doing it if there wasn't a bottom line boost for them at some stage down the line. So who's kind of leading the way in relation to these more commercially type electric vehicles, and are there any ones of note that, you know, you think could be almost the go-to electric vehicle down the line when it comes to these big commercial vehicles?
starting at the bottom, working our way up. We've got my local bike shop, and anywhere in Ireland you'll have your local bike shop, and if they're moving forward with the times, they'll have a range of cargo bikes or electric bikes in there, and some people might look at them for transporting their kids to school, but other businesses may use it to be shooting around delivering stuff or using it as a trades vehicle, so they have their tools in there. There's it shoots through traffic a lot more. I know I was talking to Joe in Dublin Loves Bikes here, and he was saying like he's got plumbers, he's got electricians that are taking a cargo bike now instead of a van, because traffic, parking, in and out, speed, it's because time is money. Then you've got the likes of Green Air, and they'd be the suppliers to on Pusth, and they'd have all their electric cargo bikes in place and cargo tricycles. And so if you are a business that could potentially use a cargo bike instead of a small electric van or an electric van. So that's one side. Then you've got the likes of, which is the overall group would be called Stellantis, but you'd have the likes of Peugeot, Citroën, DS, Opel. They'll all be running on the same platform. And this is the beauty of electric vehicles. You have a skateboard platform, so four wheels and a skateboard of batteries in the middle, and then you can stick on a minibus, you can stick on a short van, a long van, a tipper, a cargo holder, a flatbed, all of this terminology, Jess, I'm sure you're aware of.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
That's all. But joking aside, you're going to start to get to the situation where, and it's not just the Stellantis, Opel, Peugeot, Citroën vans, you've got Mercedes, you've got Fiat, all of the brands are getting into it. Number one, because businesses, like we said, are crunching the numbers. Number two, local authorities, cities, councils are saying, right, moving forward, just like in London, we are not allowing anything into the city centre that puts out toxic gases. So no diesel, no petrol, no nothing. So it has to be something that is electrically operated. So to go into London at the moment, if you're driving a big dirty diesel older than 2016, you get charged £25 a day to go in and out. That's before anything. That's before parking. That's the zero emission zone charges. And that is going to start creeping into Irish cities as well. So future-proofing what you're going to be able to do with regards to your fleet, setting up your depots and getting in the charging infrastructure, potentially utilizing solar panels. So you've got a big warehouse there, Jess, and you've got a massive roof on it. Let's take some of that free energy from the sun and fill up our vans, and let's start using free energy to move our vehicles around the place.
Yeah, and this does sort of feed back into the conversation we had last week with Will O'Brien and Dahi de Butler about reimagining the space and repurposing the space that we have. Because if the average Joe Soap, who lives in a city, and I do think that there is, we need to distinguish between those living in cities and those living in more rural areas. But those of us living in cities, you know, come like in the near future, maybe we won't all own cars, so we won't need as many car parks. So the car parks that are there now, maybe we could reimagine them to do what you just said there, you know, repurpose them so that they could almost charge and use some of that solar power and be a bit smarter with it. Will this work? And this is one of, I should have like a little jingle for when I ask a stupid question, but here we go. This is this week's one, or one of this week's ones. You know, for people who are moving goods between, say, the UK and Ireland or France and Ireland, and they come on the ferry, could we get to a stage where there'd be charger ports on the ferry to try and, again, just ensure that those types of vehicles, those types of long journeys could be electric vehicles? Or is that just pie in the sky?
Yes. It's already there.
Go away. Oh, God almighty. God, I'm doing
well this
week. Not a
stupid question at all. Some ferries, now, there may be only one or two charging points on it, but the ferries can see that as well. Once we're able to start moving around between countries again, and obviously as an island, there's a lot of ferries coming in around the different ports. And so some ferries have the ability to charge cars, vans, trucks, etc. And that's the perfect, that's exactly what you want. No more than driving your van home at night, no matter where you live in the country. If an electric van has the range, and you're talking 250, 300 kilometers on the new Opel Vivaro E. So if you know it takes 50 kilometers to get to and from work, or you're getting around a town and you're doing deliveries or jobs, businesses are very good at figuring out what my average range is, more so than a regular family. If you ask a family, what range do you do in a week or a month? They may not know, whereas a business will know it because they've had to service it, they've had to fuel it. But to go back to your question, ferries already have it in place. So that's just going to be more and more and more of the norm, and we're going to see them out and about more and more places, your supermarkets, like you're saying, the car parking places. I know I've looked at a couple of charging hubs, and they're starting to be rolled out in Ireland as well. But urban hubs, so that taxis can use it, cars can use it, delivery vans can use it. So as I'm having a sandwich or a cup of coffee, I can pop in, quick charge, and I'm off again if I need it. I'm not there hours and hours and hours on a slow charger. That can be done at nighttime in the depot or parked outside my house.
Yeah, as I'm listening to you now, I'm kind of wondering why businesses wouldn't just embrace this model. As you said, yes, there is the bigger outlay at the beginning, but if you are in logistics, or if you're in sort of the supermarket chains, or if you're in postal and parcel delivery, all of those things are on the rise. Like, we're shopping online more than ever, so we all need our stuff to get to us. Supermarkets, sure, look, get the stuff to us, that'd be the dream. It does make good sense from a business point of view, financial point of view, and an environmental point of view. So what would be the drawbacks, or what are the potholes that maybe I'm missing?
Cost is the big one, cost of investment, that initial outlay, and people going, oh my God, I can buy a van for 24,000 with a diesel engine in it, or it's 36,000 for a, so it's a big outgoing at the start. But I know the likes of AIB and OnPost, their banking division, are starting to prioritize green loans. So if you buy an electric vehicle or something that's going to make your business more environmentally friendly, you may get a cheaper rate. So it's great to see financial institutions looking at, you know what, if you green your business, we'll give you a preferential rate. And to go back to your point earlier about greenwashing, it's rife at the moment, and that's what they call it. You buy this and we plant this tree. Nobody ever sees where the tree is. Did they ever plant it? All this kind of stuff. And we definitely don't want that situation. We want business to be able to say, I'm doing this for a number of positive reasons. I know it's going to cost more upfront, but it's better for the environment. It's better for my business. It's better for the running costs. All that kind of stuff is what we want. It's going to go that way. It's just that initial, as I said, if you look around now, you'll start to see the logistics, the DPDs, the OnPosts. And when people start to see electric vehicles or even cargo bikes, it's not always about the vans and the bigger stuff. And we haven't even talked about the likes of the electric bin lorries, the electric, and there's a bin lorry, an electric bin lorry in Scotland, and it's called Bin Diesel because they name all their bin lorries. And I just thought it was so funny. So it's called Bin Diesel, but they... these are the things that are on the roads all day, every day. And if you know a fixed route, no more than the bus network and Dublin Bus, and I know that they're starting to make that transition. There's a bit of hybrid in there at the moment, but we want the full electric version, because you know that the 46A has this amount of range needed for a route. It does take a lot of money because the infrastructure has to go in, buy the bus, the van, whatever it may be, and put the charging infrastructure in place as well. But there's only one thing that you're guaranteed at the moment, and is that the price of fuel is going up and up and up. And so let's make it a transition now, when we can, to that electric commercial vehicle for your business.
Yeah, this is an area I'm super interested in. And as we spoke to Des Morley about from OnPost in part one of the show, you know, and as you mentioned there, they know the routes that they're doing for things like delivery companies, as you mentioned, bus routes and so on. They do know how long it takes, and we have so much data at our disposal now. We've been talking about this for years, about smart cities initiatives and so on. Like, we are smarter than ever before, but we're only at the beginning of this journey, I think. And I do think there's a lot more that can be done using the information that we have at our disposal, building in a bit extra perhaps for contingency plans or if the whatever hits the fan. But you have me sold. I'm completely on board with this now.
Jess might not have a license, but she's ready to buy an electric van or a cargo bike. I love it.
Listen,
and it's not always about buying it. You have the likes of the sharing schemes, the likes of the Bleeper and the Mobi that are around Dublin City and other cities around Ireland. And Bleeper Bike are bringing out a shareable e-cargo bike. So you need to do a big shop, or you need to move a bit of something, some boxes from your house to your new house. You don't want to rent a big diesel van. The amount of times I get asked about, oh, can I rent an electric van for an hour or two? not there yet, but I know Bleeper are bringing in a rentable cargo bike that you can bring if you're bringing your Christmas tree home. We're not that far away, Jess. It's only 5 more months or 6 more months
away. Don't start that.
But it's great to see companies taking the initiative and saying, what do people actually want? Let's provide that service so that they can utilize it. And hopefully Bleeper will be able to make a bit of money on the back of it as well.
Brilliant. It all sounds very good. As always, Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jess.